I would expect a great show today, Tony. I would expect a we will play to the final whistle and maybe an extra snap beyond that when we're all said and done with today. But look, the bottom line is the mood of the franchise, the mood of the fan base. Now, I'm sure there are people out there saying, yeah, but still, they didn't pay, you know, whatever. They won the game. As far as I'm concerned, that's my attitude on a Monday. Yeah. You got to look at the critically at the areas that they're not performing well in and say, what can we do to get better there? But they won the football game and the emotional swing. We were here, I mean, thinking, how bad is it going to get for Gus this week? How, you know, is Myers going to survive? What in the world, Tony? And yet another way you find to lose to a football team that you should at least start to even out. I mean, all these games where you're in them, oh, you look back and you say, Carolina, okay, even though we were competitive, sure, it's an undefeated team. You're not supposed to beat that team, not supposed to beat the Patriots. But in all the other games, they hadn't been balancing out, right? They had lost more than their share of those close games. So it's about time that something bounced in their favor. And look, they made plays as well. It's not like it was Baltimore just handed it to them. Give credit to Devon House for making plays. Nick Marshall for being on the spot. Very odd sequence, right? You had the two interceptions like last week. You had the sack fumble. You had the muff punt. The same exact quartet of turnovers that the Jags provided to the Jets to help them get a victory. Yep. Well, the Ravens provided. You can say they provided them. You can say the Jags made plays. Either way, they were the beneficiaries of those four turnovers.
No, they were. And I thought, unlike last week against the Jets, I thought the Jags kind of killed themselves with three of those four turnovers. I think, you know, you muff a punt, that's on you.
Right.
You know, there's nobody else to blame. And so for Baltimore, there is that one. The other three felt like guys for the Jags making plays and taking advantage of those opportunities. And I think with a young team that is still obviously inconsistent, that, you know, we're nine games into this thing, they find a way somehow to win that game in the end. That's what matters the most. But it's looking at this team and trying to figure out what they are and what they aren't. You know, at this point in the season, I think that we can all look at this team right now and say they aren't a good pass rushing team, and that they're a team that believes so much in trying to get pressure with their front four that they're not a good or comfortable blitzing team. And because of that, unless they completely catch somebody off guard, it's not going to be effective because they just don't have guys that this is what they've been doing all offseason. They want to get pressure with the front four, and they look like a team that's very uncomfortable having to do it another way. Throughout this process, they got a couple good blitzes against Buffalo. It turned into some points for them in that particular game. I think they're a team that right now you can say they stopped the run. And they stop the run very effectively right now. I think that's who they are, is a team that's going to stop the run. And I think more often than not, they're going to be a team that can pass the ball. And yesterday was kind of an exception to that rule. That's one of those where it just, for whatever reason, doesn't work. And it's mostly because your quarterback was a little bit off in that game yesterday. But Blake's been more on than off when it comes to that this year. So I don't think what we saw from Blake yesterday is indicative of what we're going to see from him going forward because of what I saw through the first eight games. So I think they are a team that can throw the ball and they can stop the run. And outside of that, I don't know what else they can do well, but that's gotten them to this point. Hopefully they find some consistency in some other areas and it leads to more opportunities to get wins.
Yeah, look, just hopefully they play well enough in the opportunities they have to beat some other bad teams who are also inconsistent. Obviously, when you're a team that comes in as the Tennessee Titans will on Thursday night with two wins, that's an imminently beatable team. Obviously, they've had their ups and downs this year, and we're not going to really spend a lot of time talking about that one right now today going forward. But I do feel that way, Tony. You can't squander this, because
no,
if you lose to Tennessee, you have squandered this victory. Beat Tennessee and you're tied atop the division no matter what Houston does tonight for the most wins in the AFC South. And you're behind on tiebreakers, but man, there's a lot of football left to be played, and you could be that close 4 days from now to being in first place in your division.
If you're going to talk wins and losses, and that's the bottom line, then the bottom line is they've won two out of three. And if they win on Thursday night, this is a team that's won three of their last four games. And based on what you saw a lot in 2014 and throughout the first five or six games of this season, to think this would be a team that was going to win three out of four games probably felt like a bit of a stretch. But they're in a position, if they can win a home game against Tennessee on a Thursday night, that they would have won three out of their last four contests.
Good enough for now. I mean, it's all you can do. You can't do anything about what's come before, but we can talk about the one that just happened yesterday. And today's fan feedback question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is this. It asks you simply, where does that finish rank among the great endings in Jaguar football history, whether it's regular season, postseason. You know some of the great ones out there. If you want to send your particular list of where it fits in, or you just want to tell us kind of the range, is it at the top? Is it number two? I think we all know what number one will always be for until and unless they win a Super Bowl in dramatic fashion. I think the Morton Anderson play is always going to top the list for the vast majority of Jaguar fans. But that one was certainly unexpected and thrilling and an emotional roller coaster, because you just, I tell you, the way Blake had played yesterday, I didn't have the warm and fuzzies about their ability to drive it down the field into comfortable field goal range, and it worked out for them. They got the victory, and the swing from despair and anger, and I'm sure there's still a lot of people that are not happy about the way they played, but I think they're a lot more happy now about the result of that game, and that can wash away a lot of what came before it if you're ahead at the final. Gun. So we'll talk about that today in great detail. We'll talk with John Osier. We'll also hear from Gus Bradley following the game yesterday. And you know what? We've gone this far. I haven't even kicked it off. So let's do that right now. Jaguars today starts right now.
The interceptions, I'm telling you, that they're going to come.
Flacco was under center to start the half. Forsett, the running back. Straight drop by Flacco. Looking. Fires it out to the right side. That is battled and picked off by Devon Howe. He bobbled it and then hung on, and Jacksonville gets a takeaway to start the second half. He bobbled it, hung on, picked it off, and Jacksonville starts deep in Baltimore territory near the 26-yard line. Under center is Flacco. Now it's an I formation look. Play fake, rolling to his right, fires it up the right sideline. Good coverage again by Devon House. He's going to pick it off again. Devon's second interception. He steps out of bounds after picking it off. Back-to-back series, Devon House has an interception. Had great coverage on Chris Givens, and he picks it off at the 6-yard line of Jacksonville. 14 seconds of play, 3rd and 15. Jags from their own 40. Straight drop, three-man rush. Blake steps up, fires it to the side. That is caught by Julius Thomas, but the clock's going to run. 7 seconds. They're going to have to spike it. That's just it. To get a long field goal off. Can they get it spiked? Doesn't look like Blake falls down. The play is alive. The play is alive. And now he's thrown to the ground, but as a face mask, that would make for an untimed down.
Give credit to Blake Bortles. He got it off, and then to continue the play, even though he slipped, you know, we got the face mask call. Huge play in the game, obviously. But then to come out and hit that field goal for Jason, unbelievable.
This is a 53-yarder from the left hash. Jason Myers for the win. Carson Tinker snapped it. Brian Anger will hold it. The snap and holder good. He kicks it up. This kick is good. This kick is
wow.
The Jaguars have beaten the Ravens on a 53-yard field goal from Jason Myers. Are you kidding me? Jags winning in Baltimore.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Seems like we've been here before. Seems like we've started this program already once today, Tony. I was just flying right along, running my mouth. All right, we're going to take our first time out here coming up, but we wanted to let you hear that as it brings back the good memories from yesterday afternoon and evening as the Jags pull out the victory over the Baltimore Ravens. And, oh, the sadness in Crab Cake City today, I can only imagine. That's their issue to deal with. I don't really care. Jags win 3-6. It ain't pretty. The division's not pretty. It's that kind of year. Capitalize on the ugly, ugly year that it is in the AFC South. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We'll take your calls today if you want to get in at 641-1010. Also, your texts on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Now, Tony, I spent Saturday screaming towards my little soccer charges on the pitch, mm-hmm, as I coach them hard, right? And so the voice was starting to go Saturday. And then yesterday, I may have gone on a run down the hall, a high-five run down the hall here, and let out a few choice expletives of glee. As, look, we're in here rooting for him as hard as anybody to pull this thing out, and trust me, me. We want to see this team win as much as I can't say as much as all every diehard Jag fan out there. I'm not going to say if you're a 20-year season ticket holder or more I've shown the passion that you have. Great. I'm not trying to measure myself against anybody else. Just put it this way. We were extremely joyful when that kick went through the pipes yesterday for Jason Myers and the Jacksonville Jaguars to pull out the win. So we'll talk about that at length today. Also, today, we'll take your calls, as we mentioned. You can get us on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, and at 1010XL, Fat Tony. Question of the day, where does that finish rank among the great, exciting, thrilling endings to a Jaguar game in their history? And folks, of course, we know the Jag fans and the Jacksonville community know how important it is to honor and support our veterans and military community. And we're asking for your help on that score with the Jaguars teaming up with their longtime partners of the Greater Jacksonville Area USO. Today, we're on a mission to fill Everbank Field with local veterans and active duty military members together with their families and friends for the NFL's Salute to Service game, which will take place on November 29th versus the San Diego Chargers. It's going to be a great occasion, so you can thank our hometown heroes and contribute today by heading to JaguarsSaluteToService.com and getting more information there. But we're expecting just a phenomenal turnout, and we always should take opportunities to salute those men and women, not just on those special days, but year-round, and a great opportunity for the Jags to partner up once again with the USO. And here at 1010XL and 92.5 FM, we're going to do everything we can to support them for that military appreciation effort. And again, JaguarsSaluteToService.com is the website. You know the phone number. You know the website. You know it all. Get on board. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. We'll talk with Johnny O coming up. We'll hear from Gus Bradley after the game, and a whole lot more coming your way as the Jags knock off the Baltimore Ravens 22-20 Victory Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's huge. It's really huge. And we're so close. Every game we're so close. This time we're so close we pulled it out. I mean, our record is, what, 3-6? It could easily be 6-3, you know what I mean? We know how good we are. We know how good we can be. But it was huge. A huge team win, offense, defense, and big kick by Myers. I mean, I'm so proud of him. It's just such a blessing, though.
That's Devon House after the game yesterday talking about how good it is to finally pull out a close win like they did. I voted for him on the post game for player of the game. Tony, who would you vote for the overall player of the game? Obviously, you had the game-winning kick. You had House with the two interceptions, first time by a DB. You had Hearns doing his thing, Allen Robinson doing his thing. Who would you say was the player of the day yesterday?
I mean, Myers making that kick probably is where I'd go in the end. I know he missed the short one earlier in the game that put him in a position where they needed that kick to win it, but man, for someone who had missed that kick the way he did earlier in that game to get another one from 53 and just crush it.
He did not sneak that in.
No.
And I heard Dan Hicken this morning, I didn't realize it at the time, that he kicked it into the wind. I don't know how much wind there was, but whatever there was in its face. Good from 60.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, and just absolutely never one of those that wasn't going to leave you hanging. Is it going to go in? Oh, I mean, it started to straighten up about halfway there, and it was never in doubt. So you're right, he crushed that ball yesterday, crushing the hopes of the Ravens fans as well. I don't even have anything against the Raven fans, but I don't care.
I enjoy
the Jags crushing every fan base's hopes.
No, and I love there was a quote out from House after the game yesterday, too. I think Hayes Carline put it out on Twitter yesterday afternoon where Devon House basically said, I don't know why they keep testing me. Like, talking about his interceptions. And I know they're 3-6 or whatever, you know, but that they have guys on this team that I think they do have that kind of swagger in this locker room for the first time in 3 years. I think there is a little bit of that there. It just hasn't had an opportunity to bloom at all, to this point for this team. And if they can get on any kind of roll, they've won 2 out of 3 now. If they win on Thursday night, I think you're going to see a lot of those calls that we've had complaining about this just doesn't look like a confident team. I think that's going to change. They just have to have a reason to be confident.
Ty, what did you say? We had the cut of that? All right, fire it away.
Felt good. Felt really good. I really don't understand why they keep throwing my way like that. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know what I mean, but I mean, there's one thing I do really good, and I do really good on the deep ball, and they keep throwing the deep balls, and teams keep doing it. I'm going to keep getting my hands on it.
He did knock away another pass earlier.
He did.
I'll tell you why. Because the DBs had zero interceptions going into yesterday's game. That's why they're testing you. Kidding me? And Flacco's got a big arm.
He does.
And he's going to throw it down the field. And that's just the way it is. So, hey, you know, the first one, batted ball, Johnny on the spot. Great. Second one, good coverage down the field. I thought Devon House had a terrific game. I'm not knocking Devon House, but come on, let's be honest. Secondary didn't have a pick. That's why you're getting tested back there. They're not, they don't have any respect for you. And when you're 2-6, you haven't earned respect for the
sure.
know, quite frankly.
And it could have been 3 for House, honestly. I mean, he had the diving attempt there in the end zone.
That
could have been a third one for him in that contest yesterday. So, obviously, his best game of the year statistically to this point. I think he got beat on one play that I can remember. But other than that, he was really, really good.
Yeah, I got beat by a tight end, I think, in the first. And there's so many of those tight ends that they run out there. I don't know which one it was. But, you know, look, you're going to give up a play.
Yeah, I'm curious about that kind of stuff, too, because tight ends and fullbacks and that kind of thing hurt them in that game yesterday, and I'm wondering who that falls on.
Right.
And so when Loggeman comes in tomorrow, I'm sure we'll have that conversation.
All right, let's get to the phones for the first time today. 641-1010, Victory Monday on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. We'd like to welcome you in, and we'll start with Bruce in Neptune Beach. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Good, good. Wanted to go over yesterday with some real positives that people don't think about. Number one is we matched last year's win total. We're already at 3. So, you know, we're on the rise. Number two, Blake has thrown, I believe, if I'm correct, 18 touchdown passes. That's more than last year. He's on par, if you look at it, for about 3,200 yards for the year, 32 touchdowns, and about 19 interceptions. That's all positive. If we look at what he does, and you realize that other than Yeldon, we really don't have any positive running back that are delivering right now. And we paid a lot of money for a tight end who, in my opinion right now, the best grade you could give him would be a D. So, you know, Blake does a lot of positive. And no matter how they did it yesterday, he led them to a comeback win. That's my 2 cents.
All right, you know, look, we were talking about this in the post game a little bit. It's kind of funny. You get credit for a comeback win there. That's fine. You know, they probably even out over time. It wasn't one that you felt like he just strapped them on his back and drove them down the field. They got bailed out on a penalty call. But look, that's one call. That's one play. It was the narrowest of margins, and the Jags have been in the narrowest of margins kind of games. I'm not trying to detract from anything they did. I'm glad you're positive about all that. I think Blake's on pace to throw for a lot more yards, though, than what you just described there. Not 3,200 yards. It's
no, it was well over 4,000 as of last
right.
week.
Right. I'll give you the up-to-date here in a second. It's nah, I just did the math wrong, Tony. I blew it. Anyway, it's way over 3,200 yards that he's on pace to throw for. And quite frankly, that wouldn't be all that impressive in today's NFL. 4,000 yards, a much higher benchmark. Look, statistically, yes, he's thrown a lot of touchdowns. He needs to cut down the interceptions because, look, great. All these numbers are great. But if you watch the game, how many balls did he throw right to the other team yesterday, Tony? Way too many, okay? He had the one right in Jimmy Smith's chest that would have gone for a pick six in the first half. Mm-hmm. He had the one on the final drive. I can't remember the guy. The guy made the diving attempt and should have caught that. And he had one that Dumervil got his hand on, and it looked like if he had stuck both his arms out, it would have stuck right in his hand. So that could have been 3 additional interceptions he threw yesterday. Sometimes you get away with those, and he did get away with those yesterday, but he's got to clean it up still. It's better to do that in a victory, and you can come back and then you can say, all right, let's look at the film. How can we get better rather than saying, oh, we're so close. Oh, we're so close.
Yeah.
Oh, we're so close. And we're just shooting ourselves in the foot, costing ourselves. We're beating ourselves because that drumbeat gets tired after a while. But once again, they were on the verge of beating themselves yesterday and against a bad team, and they didn't, though. They pulled it out, and that's the bottom line.
No, I mean, Dumervil made a huge mistake, and the Jaguars had the opportunity to win that game, and unlike they've done so many times before in this season, including one directly attributed to Jason Myers, where he missed those couple of field goals up there in Indianapolis, they made the play that they had to there at the end to win that football game. And I think it's not right to not have a discussion about the things that go wrong in a game like that. Look, they're going up against the 29th ranked secondary in the league, and I expected a lot more
out of
Bortles in that passing game in that game than we got. I mean, where is Julius Thomas? It's still a question that has to be asked with this team going forward in these last seven games, is where is that guy? Because he was supposed to be an impact playmaker for them on the offensive side. You have Marquise Lee come back in that game, and did he catch a pass? I know he had the reverse, but did he catch a pass?
No, he had the one awkward diving,
yeah,
kind of hurtling attempt.
And he had
to grab
the drop where it looked like, honestly, if Marquise Lee catches that ball where he's coming back to it and all the defense looked like it was running the wrong way,
right,
he may have had an opportunity to score on that play if he holds on to the ball, but he doesn't. And with all that going on, Blake Bortles, in the end, his stat line is not great. He throws for under 200 yards. But he throws two touchdowns, one interception. That's what shows up on the stat book, right? Well, he had the couple of dropped interceptions, too. The other thing he had was a couple guys he missed on the fade wide open. I mean, schemed wide open with Allen Robinson. And Brian Walters dropped a touchdown.
Right.
I mean, those things happened in the game yesterday, too. I think in that sense, it kind of did balance out, where there were opportunities for the Jaguars to make plays and there were opportunities for the Ravens to make plays, and neither of them did in yesterday's game, at least when the Jaguars' offense was on the field.
Let's get Eric in New Jersey, who says he was at the game yesterday, checking in here on 1010XL. Good morning, Eric.
Hello?
Eric, what's up?
Yeah, how you guys doing today, man?
We're good. What's going on?
Good, that's good. Not much. I just want to talk about the game. I was at the game, man, and the feeling when Myers made the field goal, man, and just to walk out the stadium with all the Ravens fans. You know, they all looking at you, man. It was an awful feeling, man. It doesn't get any better, man. Just to go to an away game, to go to another team stadium, and to come out with the W, man.
What was their attitude? Now, I assume you were wearing your Jags gear. That's why they were looking at you funny.
Yeah.
What were they saying to you throughout the, you know, before the game and throughout the course of the game, if anything?
I mean, throughout the game, they felt like the refs were trying to have to get them. Because, you know, a couple of those unnecessary roughness calls, kind of, you know, questionable. So they were really on the refs. But you know, they're packed in, man. They're ready for the offseason, man. So, you know, they're like, man, this is Jacksonville we're struggling against, and man, they're all ready for next year. So they're kind of packed in, you know. Either people left the game early. The people that were next to me left the game early. So I guess they've kind of given up on this year, man, and they're looking forward to next year. But it was just an awesome feeling, man.
It is an awesome feeling, man. Well, I can understand it, man, because, you know, Cincinnati at 8-0 in the division, looking to go 9-0 tonight, that's over for them. So when you're chasing a wild card, Eric, we appreciate the call. When you're chasing a wild card, Tony, against as many teams as are ahead of you in the picture, it is over for the Baltimore Ravens.
No, it is. For the Jaguars, which essentially have basically the same record as the Ravens, they're just... they got to get ahead of Houston and Indianapolis. Like, that's not some great mountain to climb right now in the AFC, as opposed to, well, we got to get ahead of the Raiders and the Jets and the Bills and the Steelers.
Look, if Houston does their job and loses tonight, they had the tiebreak because they won the head-to-head. But, look, it's all in the Jags' control.
Can we go to Week 17 in Houston with the division on the line?
Possibly.
How sweet would that be?
Possibly. I mean, it'd be phenomenal. It would be absolutely phenomenal. And here's the thing. This refs are out to get them. Look, calls going. Why would the refs be out to get the Ravens? Why would the refs be out to get anybody, honestly? I mean, it's this refrain just gets tired. They're picking on us. They don't want us to win. Blah, blah. Don't be a fan like that.
Stop hitting guys late.
Do what?
From the Ravens.
Yeah, stop hitting guys late.
Stop hitting guys late. You did it. You jumped on guys that were on the ground. It's stupid.
Yeah. It seems. Oh, look, if you want to complain that the calls were bad and maybe one-sided, but this idea that the refs are out to get any one particular team is honestly just
Were the calls in yesterday's game one-sided? Yes. The penalties were one-sided because Baltimore was clearly the more out-of-control team.
Anybody want to question that face mask penalty?
Right.
I don't think so. I think Elvis Dumervil still has a piece of Blake's equipment in his hand. All right, we got to take a timeout if you'd like to get on board. 641-1010. We'll check in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as well. Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony and the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. Your question today is this, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Where does that finish rank among the most exciting endings of a Jaguar game all time for you personally? Share your thoughts with us on that. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, coming back for more in a moment on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
November 29th is the military appreciation game against the Chargers. Stand with the Jaguars and the USO and support our hometown heroes. Go to jaguars.com/thankmilitary now.
That's what we talked about in the locker room. Feels like it's been a long time since we've been home, and we're so excited to come back to our fan base to play on a Thursday night. We got a quick turnaround now. We told them we can enjoy it for about 12 hours, and then we got to get back to work.
12 hours, by my calculations, it's work time, Tony.
It's done.
It's a short week, and that's fine. You don't have to enjoy this one too long.
Yeah, he's got the presser coming up at 1 o'clock today where they'll look back at yesterday's game and what happened. And then
that's it.
Man, they got to get to work.
Guys will be in here for, I think, a walkthrough later on today. So a totally different kind of week of preparation for Thursday Night Football. But hey, the Titans are facing the same thing, and they have to travel. So that's no disadvantage. Everybody does it on Thursday
Night
Football.
And they lost.
Right. Well, I don't know if that helps you or not, but regardless.
And it's malarkey.
Now he's going to – look, they will – I bet you that the Titan players will be fired up for malarkey, much like the Bills players were fired up for Rex Ryan going back to New York. Even though it's been a couple of years since that occurred, players are like that. They look for things to rally around. I don't care. Tennessee's bad. And they may be getting worse. Justin Hunter carted off yesterday.
Yeah.
Kendall Wright already been missing several games. I mean, their wide receiver core is depleted. And Mariota's been up and down this year, as you expect a rookie quarterback to be. There's nothing special about this Tennessee team. They can't run the football. They can't. There's really nothing you hang your hat on. Delanie Walker, stop him. Now, that could be an issue because they had problems with the tight end yesterday, but stop him. And nobody really scaring me a whole lot on that offense for Tennessee.
Yeah, they've been pretty good against the pass this year, but that's because they've been pretty bad against the run. I mean, I think things tend to feed on one another. It's like that Ravens team I saw yesterday. I don't think that's a particularly good pass rushing football team, but they were towards the top of the league in sacks. And I think that's in part because they give up a lot of deep passes. So teams are willing to let their quarterback sit back there in the pocket and try to get the ball downfield. And it creates opportunities for Baltimore to get sacks where maybe they wouldn't have if they were a team that could cover somebody downfield. And that's kind of what that Tennessee passing number feels like to me, is the team can't stop the run, so people run against
it. Right. If you can't stop the run, there's no point. And you're a bad team and teams are ahead of you. That's all they're going to do in the second half. And that's why it skews your passing, defensive passing. Passing statistics anyway. More from Gus Bradley after the game yesterday, as he just talked about what an unbelievable win it was.
Unbelievable game. You know, give credit, both teams really battled that game, going back and forth. We knew it was going to be a one possession game. You know, just by the history of both teams, we had a pretty good idea it could be that. Field position was going to be a big factor. Special teams was going to be a big factor. And I think all those things came. But I really give credit to our players. The will they had, we talked about at halftime, to come out. You know, it's about the coaches come up with a game plan, and really comes down to players making plays. Offense players making plays, defense getting takeaways and stops, and special teams just execution. And for them to put it all together, I think it was even highlighted more by the battle and field position, and to come away with the win is great for our team.
Yeah, I'm glad it's them and it's not you, Jacksonville, but my goodness, Ravens fans just have to be absolutely sick with the way that game played out, and especially just the last moment of that game.
Well, that not only that game, Tony, but don't forget, I mean, this is a team that was leading the Patriots at two separate occasions in the playoffs by 14 points last year, the team that went on to win the Super Bowl. And, you know, you come back, you lose Terrell Suggs week one, you lose Steve Smith later on. That's the main threat in your passing offense. This is a team that many, including myself, thought was a Super Bowl contender this year, and then it's all fallen apart for them. So they haven't experienced a season like this since prior to Flacco getting there when they went 4-12.
Yeah, and they've been close. It's not like they're getting blown out in these games. It's all been this kind of fourth quarter game. It's kind of like with San Diego in a couple weeks when the Jags play them. It's been the same thing. The record's terrible, and you could say the same thing for the Jags looking at their record. They've been close in a lot of these games, and it's just been different ways that they found to lose. And Baltimore certainly found a different way to lose a football game yesterday than I've ever seen. And Jacksonville found a different way to win a football game than I've ever seen watching the National Football League. Gus Bradley yesterday was also asked if he was surprised at all that they had a chance even to win that game at the end.
Yeah, you know what? That's you know, there's so many people that you look at. There were some mistakes. Now we had some issues, execution, especially on defense at the end. Some of the plays that were continued, but you know, that play, Blake did a great job, got the ball off, then slipped, I believe, right? Slipped at the fortitude to get up, keep the play going, and then they, hit the face mask. So, you know, that's what I said. I mean, he didn't sit there, he didn't stay down. He kept battling, kept competing. That's our central theme, always compete. And to be able to talk to our guys about that, it's good.
All right, Gus Bradley, obviously happy about that. You know, it's Tony, can you imagine? I mean, if Bortles falls down on the play and Dumervil gets there a second or two earlier than he did, mm-hmm. and just touches him down right there, I mean, just what a wave of different emotions we're experiencing from the fan base today, and understandably so, right? Could you imagine if, you know, the Jags, who looked for ways to shoot themselves in the foot yesterday, despite the fact that they got the four turnovers, they couldn't capitalize for the most part and turn them into points, right? To get up there, have a Keystone Cops routine where nobody really blocks and your quarterback falls down, and if it had ended like that, it would have been, as some would have described it, as the most Jaguar thing ever kind of thing, right? But no, it wasn't the case. He got up off the deck and maybe saved the season for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Blake Bortles helped to save the season simply by extending the play and with an assist from Dumervil, and then Myers came through and got the job done. And Gus Bradley was asked about Myers after the game, and was he kicking for his job? Did he save it with the game winner?
You know what? He mishit it. But he hit the last one. You know, I think he hit it good, too. I mean, he went in the net. Could have gone, you know, even a little bit further. So I think we appreciate that. You know, sometimes there's guys all over that field. We had some errors, some misexecution. But they came back and they made some plays, too. And although his is more visible, that's what he did. He came back.
Way to avoid answering it directly, Gus, okay? If that were me, the answer would be yes, he saved his job. Yeah. Not going to cut the guy who just won the game with a last-second kick, beyond last-second kick, but I would have if he had missed it, me personally. So, I don't know if that would have been the case with Gus or not. He's not going to tell you, apparently, if that would have been the case or not, but for Jason Myers, who lives to kick another day and hopefully a long time and is successful, but you can't have those. Look, and it happens. I get it. It happens around the league, but you've already got a guy here, Tony, who's missed two potential game winners in the same game against the team that's dominated the division. So mm-hmm. he comes in with a little negative backstory. Despite the fact that he had made a lot of kicks recently, he hadn't been doing very well with kickoffs prior to that as well. Like you look at last week as an example of that, but whether he saved it or not, he's kept it, at least for another week. Let's put it that way.
No, he has that. Gus Bradley also asked the question that I think we're all asking today, the day after that Baltimore game, on just why did the offense struggle the way they did?
You know, I don't know. We were talking about the game, like their tempo wasn't quite there, and we were trying to do some things to try to speed it up, and we were just off on a few things. You know, I don't know, but I know we were talking about it on the sideline. We just didn't feel like we were as efficient and execute like we normally did.
All right, we mentioned as well about turnovers. Usually you have turnovers like that, as many as you get. Eventually you're going to score some points. Now, theirs came in Baltimore territory, still, Jags couldn't capitalize, missed a field goal, didn't take advantage when they did drive into the red zone and getting touchdowns. And Gus Bradley was asked about that as well, the failure to get points off of those takeaways.
I think because we kept them out of the end zone, and we kept them from scoring points when you get takeaways. So, again, to look at it that way and say, hey, we got off the field, and it was a field position battle. And when you get a takeaway and it's balls on a 35-yard line, and if you do get stopped and you can punt it and change field position, That's a positive. But believe me, we'll address it. We've got to come away with points on those.
Boy, I'd love to see a game where the defense was playing that way and the offense was taking advantage of it. Because they would, that would look like a good football team. If they ever put those two things together for a week, it would look like a really good football team, at least for that week. And they've just found ways to be inconsistent in some area enough that they don't get that kind of result.
Well, the takeaways were great, I thought. But I thought that minus the takeaways, I thought they gave a better defensive performance against the Jets the week before.
I did too.
Right? So that's if you could blend that, be as dominant as you are stopping the run as you were last week. And they were good this week, not just last week's going to be tough to replicate.
Sure, but if you get four turnovers in a game and you turn that into 17 or 24
sure.
Points.
Then you're going to win a bunch of football games.
Right. I mean, that's what you expect almost when you're seeing those kind of things happen inside that game. Gus Bradley also got to talk about this. He hadn't been able to talk about this in a while, but finally getting a win on the road.
Well, we've been on the road quite a bit lately, and I think our guys are definitely looking forward to going back home. But, you know, the play as hard as we've done, week in and week out with the stretch that we've had, you know, it is. I think it's not only for Blake, but the whole team. I think it feels good for all of them.
I bet it does. I bet it does. I bet it feels good for a lot of you Jaguar fans as well. If you'd like to get in and tell us where that game ranks in terms of its ending for excitement for you as a Jaguar fan, you're welcome to do that at 641-1010, or you just want to talk about any aspect of Jaguar football. Coming up, we've got this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. Also, John Osier, senior writer for Jaguars.com, will stop by in just a few minutes. A military appreciation game coming up against the San Diego Chargers for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Jag fans in the Jacksonville community, we all know how important it is to honor and support the veterans and military here in town. We're a big military town, and we need your help on that score. The Jags are longtime partners of the greater Jacksonville area USO, and today we're on a mission to fill Everbank Field with local veterans and active duty military members together with their families and friends for our NFL Salute to Service game on November 29th. That's against the San Diego Chargers here. So thank our hometown heroes and contribute today at JaguarsSaluteToService.com. Again, coming up, we've got Honda drive around the NFL, this state in football, and Johnny O will stop by. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. On this date, November 16th, 1959, the Patriots became the AFL's eighth and final franchise under the ownership of William H. Sullivan Jr. That was way back in 1959. Famous birthdays for this date. Pretty slim pickings. Tony, I don't know how famous this qualifies, but former Jaguar kicker, who you got? Guess the former Jaguar kicker whose birthday it is today.
Mike Hollis.
You're incorrect. Guess another one.
Josh Scobie.
Guess another one.
I'm out of kickers.
Hayden Epstein. Hayden Epstein turns 35 years young today. Osi Umenyiora, born on this date in 1981. And hey, happy birthday, Crockett Gilmore. I hope you enjoyed that touchdown you scored yesterday. It did not come with a side of W for you. 24 years old for the Baltimore Ravens tight end. This date in football brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing for your home, for your place of business. Re-roofs, repairs. Call 287-7756. License number CCC056797 for Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, presenting this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
New England Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman left the game yesterday against the Giants at the end of the first quarter with an apparent foot injury. His left foot has been reportedly broken and will require surgery, but the team and Edelman are hopeful that the injury will not be season-ending, but there has been no timetable set for his potential return. New York Giants wide receiver Victor Cruz announced yesterday via social media that he is going to have season-ending surgery on his injured right calf. Cruz has not played at all for the Giants this year. According to Alex Marvez and Fox, the Saints are planning on firing defensive coordinator Rob Ryan after their debacle against Washington yesterday. And Denver Broncos quarterback Peyton Manning had a memorable Sunday against Kansas City. Manning became the all-time passing yardage leader in NFL history in the same game where he completed just 5 of 20 passes and threw 4 interceptions before being benched halfway through the third quarter for Brock Osweiler. Broncos head coach Gary Kubiak said after the game that he probably shouldn't have started and injured Manning, but he didn't make that tough call. According to Adam Schefter, this morning, Manning has a partially torn plantar fascia in his right foot, and some of his Broncos teammates told him that Manning had trouble walking in the locker room all last week. Manning is also dealing with some sort of rib and right shoulder injuries. It sounds like an old guy that's trying to continue playing a young man's game there with injuries.
Chris Mortensen reported before the game yesterday that he wouldn't be surprised, and I don't think he just pulled this out of thin air, that he wouldn't be surprised if the Denver Broncos got up big early. Now, complete opposite of how it played out. They pulled Manning early because of all the injuries. So the idea that Manning may get pulled from that game was out there, not because he would turn it over as many times as he completed passes.
Yeah, I saw a side-to-side video this morning on ESPN. Merrill Hodge actually did this, where he showed the first play of the game of Denver versus Kansas City in Denver last year. They ran the same play. It was a different guy running the route, but it was the same play, a post to the deep middle. And the remarkable difference between the way that Peyton Manning was able to throw the ball in that game versus the way he was throwing the ball yesterday. I mean, it was clear just how much he was struggling to throw the ball downfield, and he had to put everything he had into that first throw and still couldn't get anywhere near enough zip on the ball to not be intercepted to start that game. It's
all
sad.
Right. Let's get the Ozone up here, if we could introduce him so kindly.
It's time for Ono's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Ono's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Hello, John Osher. How are you?
Oh, yeah. It's an oh, yeah day.
Is that,
right?
Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah.
Victory Monday. V-O day. Victory O.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, describe if you can. I mean, are you in an open air press box in Baltimore or not?
No.
What was, from what you could tell, just the reaction, not only from the crowd, which may be difficult to tell, mm-hmm. but from the media as well? Because you know how it is. Everyone, it's not supposed to be any rooting in the press box, but everyone wants the team that they cover to win because it makes
sure.
life easier for everybody. So what was it, stunned disbelief?
It's interesting, and anybody who has done the job that I do and know what I'm talking about, there's really not a lot of reaction from writers on a tight game, mainly because it's never particularly a good thing for what you're writing when there is an unexpected ending, because all of a sudden you're trying to file literally 5 or 10 minutes after the game ends, and you're essentially rewriting everything you just did.
Right.
So that always curtails any reaction from the writers. I can say that I was sitting on road games. It's the visiting media, and usually the visiting team's officials are sitting right behind the visiting media. There was a big reaction from the Jaguars contingent, as you would expect. There's really no cheering in the press box for anybody, but after a huge win like that, you usually hear reaction from the officials of the traveling team, and it was quite a thing.
Fun, yeah. Tell Bill Polian there's no cheering in the press box.
Well, yeah, this was the opposite of what you usually heard from Bill.
I got you. All right, so it was a celebratory, happy talk.
It was one of the weirdest, most memorable, unexpected endings I've ever covered. And so we'll see where it leads.
Yeah, we will. And just in terms of how they played yesterday.
Sure.
Bortles, very bad. I mean, he threw a couple of touchdowns and had another one dropped, but mm-hmm. despite that, missed a lot
he
of
sure
open
did.
Guys.
Well,
yesterday.
And here's what's interesting. And I wrote in What We Learned This Morning for Jaguars.com in the coverage yesterday, he wasn't very good at all. What's interesting is he hasn't been good in a few ways, a few of the last few weeks, and yet he's still keeping that interception touchdown ratio okay, still doing some things where you think, you know, if this is his bad game, then maybe he's avoiding the disaster that you see from some guys who you just know are disasters. So, you know, it was still 2-1 yesterday, meaning he had a couple of touchdowns when they got down there. He made those plays, and it turned out those plays mattered. So I'm not going to sit here and say it was good at all, but managed to avoid the disaster. Got a little lucky with the Jimmy Smith dropping the interception. It could have been a pick six.
Got a little lucky on a couple of them.
Yeah, sure.
I thought Dumervil could have had one. Dumervil kind of short-armed one. He got his hand on
right.
it. Looked like if he just reached his hands out, he's going to pluck
Absolutely.
One.
But still on those two drives, they got in the red zone, what, three times that I'm thinking of, and got two touchdowns out of it. So converted those opportunities into points, which count. So I didn't have to make, you know what, I guess, did enough to win the game would be the only thing you could really say good about it, and that matters. But yeah, it was not his best game, maybe his worst game this year.
I thought it might have been.
Is interesting.
Well, it's great that they won, and it's funny, you know, you get credit for a comeback victory in that circumstance, sure, when you feel like, okay, well, they did come back and win, you know what I mean?
But, hey, it's not easy to put that face mask right there.
True, right, or to get up after you've tripped over your own feet, but he managed to do both.
Hey, well, and I heard some things in the Ozone about his mechanics and whatnot. I don't know that we can sit here and say that one game where he played, I guess, poorly is saying that his mechanics have completely gone awry. He threw for 380 last week and made some big plays last week. So, yeah, I think over time, his mechanics, I'm talking over time, over 4 or 5 seasons, I think his mechanics will hold up better the more off-season work he does. But I don't know that that's really the glaring issue that it was this time last season.
Was Jason Myers kicking for his job on that final kick?
You know, it's hard to know exactly what Dave and Gus were thinking on that, but it's also hard to imagine that he wasn't.
Right.
I mean, at some point, you know, the 26-yarder just about hit a fan. And I think that was one where, if you believe in karma, football gods, whatever, you played 10 games, I think they probably could make a case that they should have won a couple that they've lost already. So maybe that was one that they should have lost that they won. So 3-6, have they earned three? You know, should they be 3-6 if you look at the whole picture of their season? Yeah,
because while they maybe we say they quote should have won some games, they didn't, because they even though they outplayed other teams in various respects. Last week it was the turnovers, sure, against Indy, it was the missed field goals. Whatever it was, they didn't take advantage of the opportunity. So they're sitting here 3-6.
You are where you are with the golden opportunity.
The Titans come in on Thursday night and you get the 4 wins, and that seems like no big deal, but then you look up and you realize that nobody else has more than that in the division and nobody will.
Well, and really, you know, I'm not going to paint this team as a team that comes out and flexes its muscles at the bank. You know, I mean, it's not that yet. But they lost to Carolina at home, lost to Houston at home. They've got 4 or 5 coming up at home, and this is what you play through that tough schedule away from EverBank to get to. So if you take advantage of this home stretch, 4 or 5, you're right in it.
All right, we're going to take a break. You going to stick around? What do you
want to
do?
Absolutely.
All right, he's
going
to stick
for
around.
You,
he's Johnny
anything.
O, the Ozone, and we will take your calls next. We've got some calls on the line, and we will get to you coming up momentarily on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Glad you're along with us. A reminder, Military Appreciation Day coming up with the Jacksonville Jaguars. That game is going to be on November 29th against the Chargers, and Jags fans and the Jacksonville community all know how important it is to honor and support the veterans and the military community, and so we need your help in that endeavor, and we're asking for it here. The Jaguars are longtime partners of the Greater Jacksonville Area USO, and today we're on a mission to fill EverBank Field with local veterans and active duty military members together with their families and friends for our NFL Salute to Service game coming up on the 29th of the month with the San Diego Chargers. You can thank our hometown heroes and contribute today at JaguarsSaluteToService.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony with John Osier, back with more Jaguars Today in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, back here on Jaguars Today. Jags win it 22-20 over the Baltimore Ravens, now just 3 days away from Thursday Night Football, hosting the Tennessee Titans. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osher here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL. 92.5 FM on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Let's get some calls going, guys, starting with Andy calling from the beaches this morning. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Good. How are y'all, guys? Good, Jack.
We're good. What's up?
Hey, just a quick question. 2 weeks ago, I seen Tom Brady pump up his hand and change the play clock, and I'd be daggum if they didn't do it again last night on that field goal.
Did
y'all ever notice that?
They
what?
Did.
What was it?
The game-winning field goal attempt, New England came out, the clock had run down to 7 seconds, and all of a sudden the officials just reset the game clock. I don't know exactly what happened on the play.
Yeah, if you noticed, if you go back and watch it, it counts down to nine or about 12 seconds, and you'll see the placeholder pump his hand up in the air just like the referees do. And when it hit 9 seconds, it kicked over to 25 seconds right after he did that. And
yeah,
and
then Coughlin took a timeout
to Eisen. In the huddle also.
I don't know. I didn't see it. I didn't notice it at the time, so I can't really comment on it as far as that goes. What I wonder is why the Giants just didn't try to make the Patriots use their timeouts and kept throwing the football and left them all that time left to drive down and win the game.
Yeah, if the Odell Beckham play on first down takes one more second, then it's 40 more seconds off the clock. I mean, that's how razor thin that margin was there. So, again, the Giants blow clock management at the end of the game.
Yeah, I guess so. I couldn't really comment on that because I wasn't really focused in on that.
I was watching Odell catch the ball.
You were still doing your Jaguars happy dance.
No,
that game,
I was.
All right.
Honestly, I was because I was on my way home trying to figure out what I was going to do for dinner, and I was like, I'm eating whatever I want.
That's right.
The Jaguars won. I'm going to have whatever I want. I'm eating just junk tonight. It's going to be wonderful.
No, after 2 hours of post game and an hour drive home and getting dinner on top of that, I did not care to focus in on how Tony's team was going to blow another late game situation. That was not my goal.
Catch the ball.
And a day was shattered. You left that part out.
That's a brutal.
Right. Like,
a brutal
face to face for hours.
All day long with JT.
It was more
Shattered.
Of my Patriots hate than my Giants love last night, too. I'm just sick of Tom Brady and the Patriots. I'm ready for them to lose.
Yeah, they're wearing.
All right. Let's go to Jason on the south side up next. Hello, Jason.
Hey, what's up, guys? I just got a few stats I wanted to point out. Our wide receivers are killing it this year. They got 14 touchdowns combined, which is the most in the NFL. And also, I think both Hearns and Robinson's both going to obviously go over 1,000 yards this year, which I don't think we've had that since Keenan and Jimmy. And also, I think Telvin leads the league in tackles, and Bortles needs 5 more touchdowns to break the record. So I just wanted to point that out. And also, go Bengals tonight.
All right, yeah, absolutely go Bengals. You're right about that. 7 touchdowns in a row, 7 games in a row with a touchdown for Allen Hurns, 7 touchdowns for Allen Robinson as well. Pretty amazing stuff that those guys were able to do yesterday, even on a day of bad passing.
Yeah.
Blake got his 2 guys involved in the end zone and really could add another one easily to Allen Robinson, wide open in the end zone, just missed him badly on that corner route on first down, and Jags failed to punch it in from the 3 and settled for a short field goal.
And I'm sure you guys have talked about it a little bit, but Allen Hurns, as is not surprising that he would do, I think really downplayed the foot last week. In talking to him afterward, in sort of the emotion and relief of the post game, I think it was pretty clear he played through more than he wanted to let on. And it's funny, I was thinking during the game watching him. In August, I got many legitimate emails from people saying, why don't we release Allen Hurns? Because he had dropped a couple of preseason passes. And I get it, there's frustration there. But you talk about a kid who yesterday not only played through the foot, caught some balls where he was knocked, not out, but probably shouldn't have caught the ball. And he has become a guy who catches the ball in traffic, who makes big plays. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and knock on wood, not jinx him, but his hands compared to last year, the concentration level, whatever that is, they thought that he was a guy who could do this in the level of, they never thought he had bad hands when he was dropping it. Because he doesn't have, you know, what you would call hard hands where he drops a lot in practice. And so far, again, knock on wood, he's got that turned around and is having a remarkable year.
Absolutely. Let's go to Jack on the west side up next. Hello, Jack. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I just have a funny from yesterday's game. If you go back and look at Allen Hurns' touchdown reception, go back and look at the tape. Look at Jeremy Parnell and the guy that he's blocking. They both stand there like they're carrying on a conversation. Neither one of them makes a move. The guy doesn't try to rush. Parnell doesn't try to block it, it's like they say, hey, man, we're going to take this play off, all right? Now we're going to have a little conversation. It's like that's what they were doing. And it was really hilarious to watch it live because neither one of them did anything on that play. They were both motionless. They didn't even move. They stood there like, hey, man, what's going on today? Well, I'm all right. How you doing? And it was really hilarious. But go back and look at it, and you really enjoy a little comical aspect from yesterday's game.
All right. Well, I'll have to check that out. Thank you. I don't know. I don't recall seeing that, but you wondered, did they think there was maybe an offside? You know what I mean? Sometimes the play stops.
And last play, a lot of people stopped.
Right. Did they think they were spiking the ball? What did the offensive line think, John? They just stood there.
That I don't know because, again, I didn't really see the stopping. I saw it once. I saw it live. So didn't really think in terms of had they stopped. It would stand to reason because with 14 seconds left in that situation, your instinct as a lineman is that you're going to spike the ball fast, go another play. That would be what the normal situation in their mayday would call for. They call that drive mayday. So it wouldn't be illogical to think that as a lineman you are thinking, okay, we're going to spike, go, and then run a Hail Mary. And perhaps that's what they were thinking because everything I've heard, and I haven't had a chance to watch the replay, is that it looked like most of the front on both sides stopped.
Except
for Doomerville and Bortles, I guess.
Yeah, the penalty on Beatles, right, that made it, what was it, 3rd and 15. So the only thing I can think is that when they completed the 11-yard pass to Thomas, they thought, oh, we just picked up a first down.
Right.
Let's hurry up there and spike the ball and, you know, throw a Hail Mary or whatever we're going to do at that point in time.
And that was the remarkable thing about the play. It wasn't like you thought, hey, they've got a chance for a field goal if they complete this pass. You're thinking they're about to snap for a chaotic Hail Mary, not even have a chance to set up a Hail Mary, but a Hail Mary where you're coming off of a non-stop clock.
Right.
And it wasn't like you were thinking, well, they have a chance to get a field goal.
The receivers do on that? But because when I watched it and we saw the replay several times, the receivers are out of the picture.
My impression, you know, and again, I'm trying to remember something that I wasn't even really watching closely, but I was seeing flashes. My impression is they went for Hail Mary.
That's what I would assume they did, because they weren't even in the picture. But
right.
So they knew what was going on, but the O-line just was like, it was weird. I mean, even when there's only a three-man rush and you don't have anyone to block, you're kind of, you know, in a position, a posture to be ready to block somebody.
Right.
They just stood up like it was going to be a spike and the play's dead.
I was trying to grab Hearns and Myers and some other people after the game, so I didn't get a chance to talk to Wisniewski. I heard from what somebody else said that he snapped the ball, was watching the play clock, and again, I'm getting this secondhand, but that with 14 seconds left, their usual time on that is 16 seconds.
Right, that's what I heard Blake say. Yeah.
That's what Bortles said. And I guess Wisniewski, who's got the ball in his hand for the snap, was watching the clock and basically said to himself, I'm snapping this at 1 no matter what, no matter if the other guys are set or not, because I get the snap off. So I think he snapped. I'm drawing conclusions here, but I think he snapped before Blake was expecting it because he was watching the clock and said, okay, it's at 1 now.
Got to snap it.
It's got to go.
Right.
So if that's the case, and I'm interested to talk to him today, heads up, right?
Oh, it is, but that's what makes it funny that, I mean, everybody else just, I mean, you have to watch it. It's like they really thought the play had been blown dead or something. It was very strange. But Blake caught the snap. It didn't look like he wasn't ready for the snap. And then he just fell down, you know, and it's just, I mean.
Well, you've got to fall down on that play, Mike.
Exactly.
If you don't.
Well, the timing, you get the timing, the sequence, you don't want Doomerville to get there too late.
If you don't fall down, the whole thing doesn't work.
You got to sink the hand to the face mask. A couple of texts coming in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Why is Blake so bad at the fade pass in the end zone? Seems like would be one of the easiest throws in the game. And another one, great win yesterday. Quick question. What do you guys think is going on with those failed fade routes and corner routes? I think sometimes Blake is throwing it out of bounds, and sometimes it's on the wide receivers. It hasn't worked all season, but it looks like this is a part of our red zone offense and isn't going away. It's part of pretty much every team's red zone offense. He threw a beautiful pass.
And it worked once this year. I mean, it was think A-Rob caught one.
He did. And he threw a beautiful one to Brian Walters, who just flat dropped it yesterday. I mean, of all people that you think are not going to
drop the ball.
Which
might be the first time since last Christmas that he's dropped the ball.
Right, and you don't typically think of a guy his size getting fade routes thrown to him, but his play worked perfectly. I mean, he was open, he got open, and Blake hit him right on the hands.
Well, it's something that I think we can say that Blake hasn't been very good at it this year. It's something that he certainly needs to get better at because Julius Thomas and Allen Robinson, particularly Allen Robinson, I would think Allen Robinson has a chance to be one of the better in the league at that catch. So you've got to give him a chance to make it.
Yeah. I mean,
it's got to be something that's part of Allen's repertoire going forward.
Julius is still a mystery at this point in time.
Yeah.
You know, the lack. Now, yesterday I saw Blake trying to hit him a couple of times, and he was just wildly off target.
There was so much that was off target with Blake yesterday that I kind of hate to pile in Julius with that. I get that it's a trend.
Right.
But I don't think it was really a matter of Julius not performing yesterday. I think Blake was just off.
Marquise Lee come through unscathed, as far as we know?
He said he did, and he admitted afterward. And think about Marquise, as much as fans criticize and are tired of the hamstring, I get that. He's pretty honest and upfront in this situation. He knew he was rusty, didn't feel like he played very well. I think the drop that he had across the middle, and then there was one on the touchdown that looked like he had a shot at, and it was pretty good defense, if I remember right. He didn't think he played very well. Thought he left a couple opportunities on the field, but I think he was excited that the things that make him good when he's good, meaning that quick twitch, that athleticism, I think he was able to do those things comfortably and feel like him. And I'm still excited to see him in these last seven games.
All right, let's get James out in Orange Park up next. Good morning, James. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Love the show. Just a quick question, and I'm thrilled that we won. But I just didn't leave that game feeling any more confident about the direction we're going in. And the special teams, and we forgot about the dropped interception at the end where Blake kind of threw it up. I'm thrilled we won, but again, I'm not seeing anything that gives me hope. I mean, we needed four turnovers, five personal foul calls, and a near pick six just to squeak out a game. And maybe I'm wrong, but I'll hang up and listen to your opinion on that. Thanks so much.
All right, well, we appreciate the call. I will say you probably haven't heard all of today's show because one of the first things we talked about was how many near interceptions that Blake Bortles mm-hmm. threw yesterday. Trust me, we recognize. Here's the way I look at it. You know, are the Jets saying, man, there's nothing going on? We needed four turnovers against the Jaguars, and, you know, all these things had to go our way.
Win and move on.
And we still won by, you know, if the Jags were winning a bunch of these games, now clearly you'd like to be winning by comfortable margins,
that's
right?
That's not who they're going to be this year.
Not this year.
Yeah.
Right. But let's start finding a way to win these games where, yeah, they're making mistakes, but they, at the end of the day, had enough to go on the road and score more points than the other team.
Right.
Special teams, I don't see it improving this year. The coverage has been abysmal.
Yep.
And where are you going to fix that? You can't. I mean, you're into the season. You've got who you have. Pass rush, not going to get any better, right? Next year, there's hope. Dante Fowler Jr. and whoever else you go out and acquire, you mix things up. But, look, yesterday was, as you said, a bad day for Blake, and they still found a way to win. If Blake had played like he played the week before, minus the interceptions, but, I mean, he almost had those two. But even with the turnovers, if he had slung it around, they could have won that game by 14 points yesterday, and you would have thought against Baltimore secondary, the opportunity was there to do just that.
I said it last week. I said it the week before. I think we know, and I heard you guys talking about it first hour. I think we know what this team is. It's pretty good against the run. It's not going to get a pass rush with four, and I don't know that it's a particularly overall good blitzing team. Is it because of what Tony said earlier that they just don't feel comfortable doing it? Is it just not what they do? But, and then I think on offense, we've seen it has potential. There are good things. They are starting to see some playmakers, and it is still a young offense that's going to be inconsistent. When you've got all that, I think you're going to play seven more close games that feel a lot like the last three.
Yeah.
And if you flip a coin and win them, then you're in good shape. If you can't close, then you're not in good shape.
All right, let's take a time out here. We'll come back, take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, which asked you today, where does that finish rank among the most exciting endings to a Jaguar game as you've observed as a fan? Where does it fall in the rankings? And if you want to put some of the other great ones in there, we certainly had a lot of nominations. We know what most of the key ones are, so share your thoughts with us there. At MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. A Wild West Guns and Gold Monday continues in a moment with John Osier. I'm Mike Dempsey along with Fat Tony here on Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Down the stretch here on Jaguars Today as we wrap up this morning with John Osher, Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey here with you. We'll get a call or two in. We'll get to fan feedback spotlight and read a few of these texts on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as we've got XL Primetime coming up at the top of the hour. On the text line, this one in says, tell James, who just said, it was a little inexplicable. Look, people have to understand, I don't want to get into sidetracked every conversation argument with every caller about every point of view that they have because we have a limited amount of time. But it was curious when he said, I don't see any reason to be excited about this team or their improvement or words to that effect. Like, yeah, I don't know what team you're watching, but it's not my job to convince. If that's how you feel, precisely, you feel that way. You know what I mean? I'm not going to, but we were kind of like, really? That seems odd. This one said, tell James to enjoy the damn win. Football's full of plays, either going your way or not going your way. Enjoy the W. Hashtag Jaguars today. It's beyond that. I think he did say, hey, I was happy for the win. If you really have looked at this team and see no reason, I'm not saying that it's good enough.
No.
And because as soon as you say that, people are saying, well, look, there's still only 3-6 or whatever. I can count. I know what the record is. I can read the record. I know what it is. I've followed along.
They have gotten better through 9 games than they were last year. If you believe that that will continue, then it's good. If you believe that this is as good as they're going to get under this process, well, then no, it's not good.
Right, it's not good enough where they are right now.
And that's the bottom line.
Right, quite frankly, we need to get away from comparing it to where they were the first couple of years, because where they were the first couple of years was absolutely abysmal.
Well, but that's where you measure progress.
I understand how you measure progress, right, but is it coming quickly enough? And how, and by incrementally, how much better is it? You know, let's say that Elvis Dumervil doesn't grab the face mask yesterday, which he did, right? And they're 2-7.
Right.
You're sitting there saying, are they going to top the win total from 2 years ago? You know, are they going to get more than 4? We still don't know what they're going to get, but I get it. You know, you can look at it any way you want.
That's
it's not my job to convince you to feel any way.
That's why it's impossible, albeit necessary, to try to analyze during week 9. But you got to do it, so that's what we do.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah.
All right. Another one. If James sees no improvement with the way Robinson, Hearns, and Bortles are playing, he is less than smart. He used a word
that's not nice.
He used another word for it that I use quite frequently.
I think there are reasons to have hope. I think the inconsistency of this team, if it's still driving you a little batty, that's fair too. Because, look, that's a game yesterday where they're going up against the 29th ranked pass defense, and Blake Bortles and those guys have been blazing hot, it felt like. They go up against Darrell Revis and Cromartie and torch them. And then the next week they're going up against Jimmy Smith and a bunch of guys and can't get the same kind of thing
quite
done.
Frankly, I think Jimmy Smith has been a good player for a few years, and it's a little surprising that a guy like that can be part of a secondary that has been as bad as they've been. But there's no denying they've been as bad as they've been.
They've been awful.
That they've been terrible. I get it.
And the big plays that the Jags have been getting for the first 8 games all of a sudden weren't there yesterday. It was just weird to see that they weren't there, because that's the game where you expected to show up, where the Jaguars look like they have this real strength. We pass the ball better than a lot of teams in this league. And then you get into a game where the real weakness of your opponent is defending that, and all of a sudden it goes away for the most part in that particular game. So it was a little bit shocking to see that. But again, it's inconsistency from this team. It's the reason they're 3-6.
All right, let's look at the fan feedback spotlight asking today, where does that finish rank with some of the great endings, most exciting endings in Jaguar football history? Tony, what do we get?
Here's what we got from Matt. It ranks second, as long as the Jags do well and not tank the rest of the season. From Ocho Ficho, right there between Garrard's Hail Mary and the Saints River City Relay ending. From Adam, Anderson missed field goal number 1, Garrard run in Pittsburgh number 2, Hail Mary 3, Scobie 59-yarder against the Colts 4. And then yesterday he has at 5. From Kyle, I'd say number one for me personally was at the game and got to celebrate in a sea of shocked Ravens fans. It was perfect. From Brian, it's my top win of all time. Being at the game made it more special for me. I still have a huge smile on my face. From Oz Dog, I rank it fourth. Scobie's 59-yard game winner against the Colts in 2010. Garrard's scramble against Pittsburgh and DeMortensen missed field goal ahead of it. From Eric, I'd put it in my top five, probably fourth right now after the miss Hail Mary and 59-yard field goal. Hashtag nice win. Demetrius says, number one, because for the first time in 6 years, we have something to play for in November other than moral victories. And from Bill, this has a similar feel to the 96 Falcons game, but time will tell. Hashtag just win, baby.
Here's one from Doug that says, who cares? Can we just get Gus the number for some hair, laser hair removal? Hashtag holy back hair. Gus.
It was something else.
Gus is going natural and free. The shirt might have got pulled up and all the excitement yesterday, John.
That's just not nice.
And the back hair got exposed for all to see.
Here's the thing. You know how they run those, like, ESPN always does those percentage chance of winning games.
As
thing.
It's going
have
on.
You seen those?
Yes.
I wonder what, if you would run that with 3 seconds left.
Well, you like in a real time, what, as right. they're running up to try to get the snap off kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, because, I mean, and again, I don't want to belabor the point, but how many weird things had to go exactly right? Wisniewski gets the snap with a half a second. You have a face mask, for goodness sake. Bortles slips. Nobody, you know, none of
and
that
gets up. Yeah. That's just that one play.
And the kid has to put it through.
Well, he has to put it through, and the other kid has to drop the football. Right, Lewis has to drop the football that Blake served up to him. That should have been a game-ending interception, or could have been a game-ending interception.
Down.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have that. Yeah, I mean, John, this game is so similar to last week. I mean, honestly, I keep bringing up the turnovers. It was two interceptions. It was a strip sack fumble by a quarterback, and it was a muff punt. The exact four that the Jags served up for the Jets last week. The Ravens outgained the Jags by 146 yards. Yeah. Last week, the Jags outgained the Jets by 139 yards. Shows you the power of turnovers in the game, and the Jets made enough plays just to capitalize. And that's why, look, I get it. The Jag fans that were steamy about the result last week and the overall direction of the franchise, I understood it. Sitting there at 2-6, it's tough to say, you know, they outplayed the Jets. They should have won that game.
Right.
Yeah, but with the exception of the turnovers. Turnovers are a big factor, and you played a role in it. But that's how I felt, and you can feel the same way this week. So if you're going to say, put it this way, if you're going to say, well, come on, this is such a fluke, then say the same thing about the Jets beating the Jags last week. And then as long as you're doing that, then because how many times are you going to lose the turnover battle as badly as the Jets lost it, get outgained as badly as they did, and still win? Well, the Jags are another example of doing that a week later. So,
guess what?
What?
You know, we debated a few weeks ago, must win?
Yes.
I'm on board.
Are you?
This one's it.
This is Thursday night?
Must
win. You have to, right? Can't give it back.
Yeah. I haven't been on board with you before.
Yeah,
I'm debating it, but, yeah, I mean, because it's at home, and now you've got to stretch at home, and now
you've
got
to win a division game.
And this... if they win on Thursday, boy, this gets interesting.
The Jags control whether or not they make the postseason.
And that's, just about, yeah.
Oh, they do? You kidding me? Because if they beat Tennessee, they get their fourth win. They have another game head-to-head with Indy, right?
But if the Jags technically...
put it this way, if the Jags win out, they're in the postseason.
If they win all four of their division games, I think they're going to win the South.
If the Colts win out except for the Jags, though, they'd still have the tiebreaker.
But they wouldn't have the same record. The Jags would have a better record.
Well, if the Colts, okay,
right? If the Colts,
because you'd be handing the Colts another loss,
yes,
and then you'd be tied
up another loss. No,
yeah, you're a game behind them now.
Right, yeah, now you are, but Thursday night you're going to pick up your fourth win of the season.
Right, they're 3-6. Colts are 4-5. So they're a game ahead.
Yeah, I don't
half
know what
game.
The tiebreaker
they'd be a half
would be.
Game ahead. You're right. You're right.
But
that's true.
It'd be conference.
The
record,
Colts would have to win out for what you're saying to not.
Other
be
than
true.
The Jags.
So
game.
Realistic, right? So It would
That's a good point, because if the Colts won out, they'd probably win the tiebreaker, because
it's a good
if they
point
won out,
because
they'd be
true.
5-1 in the division.
Right.
It is a good point because it's true. Right. You're right about that. But I'll put it this way.
Realistically,
if the Jags win out, they will make the postseason.
I would absolutely say you're right. Realistically, if they win out. Yeah.
And I guarantee there are people there. What are you talking about, win out? Look, just enjoy the win, man. And
hey,
you know, enjoy the fact that
we're talking a little playoff.
They are a game out of first place right now. All right. Then go win on Thursday night, get your fourth win before the Colts can do anything about it, and then let him run Matt Hasselbeck out there for 2 months and see how he does.
That's the point, is that, you know, again, if you win Thursday, you're right in this thing, and you're checking loss columns, you're looking at the scoreboard, it gets fun.
All right, XL Primetime coming up at high noon. Chad Johnson joins them, the VP of Sales and Service for the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's just minutes away, so stick around for that, folks. As Jag fans in the Jacksonville community all know how important it is to honor and support the veterans and military community, and we're asking for your help in that regard. The Jaguars, with their longtime partners of the Greater Jacksonville Area USO, today they're on a mission to fill Everbank Field, and we're trying to help them out with local veterans and active duty military members together with their families and friends for our NFL Salute to Service game coming up on November 29th. Versus the San Diego Chargers, and we thank our hometown heroes all the time. But if you'd like to thank our hometown heroes and contribute today, you can head to JaguarsSaluteToService.com to find out how you can do that even more. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Congrats to the Jags and their fans for hanging in there and pulling out a victory yesterday. Let's do it again in 3 days against the Tennessee Titans. And then, oh my goodness, how fun could the final month and a half of the season be?
Oh, it'd be great.
The answer is a lot of fun, John, because it's true.
Because it's true.
John Osier, check him out at Jaguars.com on a daily basis. What's coming up later today?
I have no idea.
All right, it's excellent.
Chaos. No, I mean,
chaos on Jaguars.
Gus Bradley press conference. It's a real short week this week, and everything that we usually spread out over 5 days is into three. So let's just go do it.
All right, for John Osier, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, thanks to Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor. I'm Mike Dempsey. That does it for Jaguars Today XL Primetime. Coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.